Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, saging, or positive aging. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say that I'm out to retire the word retirement. We're not retiring, but we're moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. Today, I've decided to interview Meg Newhouse. Meg is the author of Legacies of the Heart, Living a Life That Matters. In both her professional and personal life, Meg has sought to call out passion and purpose in her students, coaching clients, and even friends and colleagues. For the past 20 plus years, she's worked with people in midlife and beyond to craft fulfilling and contributing lives. Her interest in work and legacy evolved naturally over the past several years, and we're going to kind of explore that. In 2002, she founded and co-led the Life Planning Network, a national community of professionals committed to a holistic model for helping people thrive in the second half of life. More recently, she's been engaged with the Conscious Elders Network from its early stages and co-chairs its education branch. Meg has helped plan 5 positive aging conferences and has written 3 how-to books as well as co-edited LPN's Live Smart After 50. For more information about Meg, please read the bio attached to this podcast. Now, I have attended Meg's workshop on legacy at the Saging International Conference, and her book is valuable to me in my work and workshops. Since legacy work is a major component of saging, or what we call positive aging, we're going to learn more about this topic from this conversation with Meg. Well, welcome to the series, Meg.
Thanks so much, Jan. I'm so pleased to be here.
Well, great. As I said, you know, I've attended your workshops. I've found them very valuable. And your work and your book, I use it in my workshops. How did you get interested in the topic of legacy work?
Well, I think there's nothing really dramatic about it. I think that it just kind of naturally evolved from the work that I was in helping people craft a more fulfilling and engaged second half. But there was a time, a program that we put on about legacy that really kind of grabbed me. And then I had a colleague, Donna Crone, and we were both interested in legacy and sort of from different angles. So we worked together for a couple of years on programs. And by that time, I was really hooked, and I was really very hooked for a few years, enough to start the book, but I have to say that the process, the journey of writing the book was very circuitous and a little bit tortured.
Oh, really? Okay. Any specifics about that?
I probably shouldn't have said that because
that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, I think in this work, we learn so much about ourselves in the process of, you know, writing or sharing what we're learning. I mean, this whole life unfolding at this stage of life is so revealing.
Exactly. And you know what? So I'm happy to confess. I had a very busy life with, you know, some the activities you mentioned and other personal ones. But secondly, and I would say the most important thing was I had a lot of demons, sort of internal demons that I had to overcome to finish this book. Most importantly, this isn't good enough, to be blunt. I can't do this. It's not good enough. And so it was an evolution. It was a personal growth evolution, and I don't know whether to. I'm getting pretty outrageous early on, but I have a word for these things, and the whole. I think life is full of these growth opportunities, and sometimes they're not so pleasant, and then they're known as AFGOs.
Uh huh.
AFGO,
Oh.
another blanking growth opportunity.
Oh, I get it. I get it. Well, and I think the other thing is so many people look at this time of life as decline. And as you pointed out, there's so many growth opportunities. And some of them aren't pleasant, but we need to grow from them. And that's a good point. Well, Meg, what do you mean by legacy? Because there may be people listening to this podcast that are not familiar with legacy work, legacy as an even term, or they may think they know what we're talking about and they're not sure. So talk about legacy and then particularly legacies of the heart.
Sure. All right. Well, my view of legacy is fairly unconventional. It is definitely more than the dictionary definition of legacy as a material bequest, usually given at death, or in a will. And it's not for our deathbeds. It's not for the rich and the famous. It's really the simplest definition that I can give is that it is the footprint of our lives that lives on beyond our death and usually into another generation. Now, I wonder, Jan, if I could, I would like to give a story to illustrate and sort of help me flesh out what I mean by this.
I think that'd be great. Go ahead.
Okay, and before I do that, I would like to ask your listeners to consider the following question. Knowing just what you know, that this is a broad, multidimensional concept, legacy, and it is the imprint of your life, to think about someone who cared about you, who left you a legacy. And answer these questions. What was the legacy? And who gave it? How did it impact you then and over the time of your life? And just for a moment, I'd like people to think about that because that's a question I ask in every workshop, and my story comes out of a workshop. So, what was the legacy? Who gave it? What was the impact of it on your life then at the time and throughout?
Excellent question.
So, in one of my workshops, there's a woman, and I call her Roberta, who answered that question morosely. And she said that her legacy was no legacy, that her parents had grown up in difficult circumstances, and they were extremely eager to put their whole childhoods and families behind them. And she called them militantly forward-looking, so that they rarely saw a family. They moved a lot. They didn't keep possessions. And the only legacy that she felt she had was a set of felt sequined Christmas ornaments that one of her grandmothers had made. And she treasured it greatly because, as she said, I had this legacy, maybe I had this legacy of a mantra, never look back. Well, she really had a much bigger legacy than that, and it was an intangible legacy. It was that legacy of rootlessness and lack of community and lack of sense of family and heritage. And I think these intangible legacies are often the most powerful. That's what most people come up with when I ask that question, some kind of legacy of character or advice or ways of essence of a personality or values that are passed on. And that's what people first think of, or maybe a tangible legacy that represented something like that. So for starters, legacies are intangible and tangible. And they're also private and public, and I distinguish between that. And private spheres like the family and the circles of friends and more or less the private lives. And then there, of course, the public square, and that includes our workplace and anything else we might do that's in public. So we have that sense as well. And then we see that legacies are not, even from people who might have cared about us, are not always positive. In fact,
I think that's a real interesting point that a lot of people don't think about is, you know, when we say legacy, you know, you've got to think about your legacy. I think right away, most people think positive, but it's not always so positive. And actually, I have a good story that goes along with that, but I'll share it later. So go ahead.
Well, actually, I don't care if you share. Well, I'll finish, Roberta, but I'd love to hear your story.
Okay, because it's a real interesting story.
Okay, great. And I'll tell you, I had plenty of negative legacies too, or mixed. And we invariably leave them as well, because we are leaving these legacies.
All the time.
All the time, whether or not we're aware of them.
Right.
Let me just think if there's anything else about these legacies. Well, then we get into the need to get into this business of legacies of the heart. And I think the question there is, how do we leave more positive legacies? So maybe, do you want to just insert your story here before I go on?
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. Well, it's just a quick story, but I often use this in some of my workshops when I'm talking about legacy. I weave legacy work into my leadership workshops, talking about what kind of legacy is the leader leaving. And again, it could be positive, it could be negative. So leader meaning just a person in influence, mm-hmm. who influences the lives of others. Well, here's a story where I had a professor in my PhD program, and he thrived on being, he wanted students to be scared of him. He thrived on being a tough, challenging, you know, exams would take an average of 4.5 hours. Some people would take 7 hours for the exam. I mean, he just thrived on being challenging and tough. And, but, you know, obviously I made it through the program, and years later I was, co-authoring a book with another one of my dissertation, chairs, and she was filling me in on, he had died, and he died he was in his late 70s, and I had not heard that. I did not know that he had died. And she said, well, it was a very interesting funeral. She said the family made it very clear, because there's kind of a trend, as you probably know, in some memorial services, that if somebody wants to share a story, kind of an open mic sometimes, that if somebody wants to share a story, feel free to come up. And the family made it very clear, we are not having anyone speak if they are not exactly assigned to speak. And my former professor said they were so scared of what people might say about him, because he had such a bad reputation of being such a kind of a mean, cruel, hard professor. And so isn't that a terrible legacy?
Yes, it's very,
you know, sad. So anyway, that's my story, but that is a...
Actually, that leads right into the question.
Because it's kind of opposite of legacies of the heart. So
we don't want that. So my first piece of advice is simply to be aware, to be intentional and aware of your legacies. And also, I think it helps, actually. Maybe it'll help to have a visual, to paint a visual, because I use this model kind of in my book. I call it a double funnel model. And if you can imagine a double funnel with no at the bottom or the top, and at the waist is a circle, and in the waist is a heart. And into the top come all the legacies we get. And that's, you know, for everything from parents to grandparents and relatives and peers and school teachers of all kinds, and the culture. And they come in, and they are filtered through who we are and our personalities and the heart. And then what we do is then the legacies we leave filter out at the bottom and ripple out beyond that. So what is so, two things are important about that. We, first of all, the center, the heart, the center is our choice point. We don't have a lot of choice over what legacies we get, we receive. And we don't even have a lot of control over the legacies we leave because it depends on how they're received.
Sure.
However, we, where our control is and our choice is as how we, what do we do with the legacies we receive and what, and how do we make them more positive? And so the things we could do, the choice points, we can pass along what we receive. We can interrupt a negative legacy. That professor could have decided to change his personality, maybe. Or you can transform something that was really painful and negative into something really positive.
That and, is a really good point.
And I love,
you know, I mean, that's where trying to break some, especially if there are some negative family patterns, trying to break those patterns so you don't pass them on.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That is, oh, Meg, that is powerful. Go ahead.
If I don't continue, because I'm going to lose my train of thought here.
Please keep going. I'm sorry.
All right. It's okay. It's fine. But so we have that choice point. And when I get back to Roberta, I'm going to tell you how she made choices. But the other thing is the heart. The heart is key to leaving more positive legacies. And by that, by the heart, I mean our most generous, our wisest, our best selves, our, people can use whatever term they use, in contrast with the more primitive ego instincts, survival instincts like domination, control, exclusion, lack. And so when we're living from this higher part of ourselves, our legacies, and I call it for shorthand, love instead of fear.
Sure.
And when we're living from that as best we can, and I don't expect, I'm certainly not a saint and don't expect most of us are, but it's something we can just be aware of and aspire to. And when we're there, the legacies are much more likely to be positive. They're gifts of ourselves. Without.
Sure.
So that's why Legacies of the Heart is the title.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
No, that's excellent. Why is having a legacy perspective important for saging, conscious eldering, or positive aging? I mean, why is this whole area of legacy? I did interview another woman. She's written a book on ethical wills. And so we talked about legacy work and ethical wills, legacy letters. But why is this whole legacy perspective? Why is it so important for this part of life?
All right, we'll go to that. And if there's time, I'll go back to Roberta and just illustrate. But I'd rather go on to that. So it's because I think if we embrace, one of my prescriptions for a more positive legacy is to embrace our aging. And that's because, for several reasons. And did you interview Jan Fried? Or somebody else, because she's a big one for legacy letters. Anyway.
Oh, you mean Rachel. Rachel Fried?
I mean Rachel.
Yeah. Rachel's, she writes, which she often writes for the Huffington Post, or she did. And you're right. She's very big. And you know what? I have tried to connect with her mainly because of the common last name.
Right.
And our common interests. I thought that was interesting, but I have not connected with her yet, but.
Okay, well, she influenced me a lot, and so did my partner, at my initial partner.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we need to embrace our aging, and there's a few reasons. First of all, probably your listeners, and certainly you, are very aware of the research in psychology and anthropology and neuroscience and other fields that show continual development in the second half of life.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm quite, you know, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we wake up to the fact that we've have a lot more of our lives behind us than ahead of us. And so some of these post-midlife markers are, you know, include a greater concern with significance over success, making a contribution, finding that, that your life is matter has mattered, and a desire to sum up your life and pass that on. And as you well know, in this aging world, Reb Zalman Schachter Shalomi's legacy, leaving a legacy, was a big part of his prescription for saging. So the other thing that I think happens at has a tendency to happen as we age is we get more tolerant, and we have a longer and wider and a view of the world and of life, and greater wisdom and equanimity. So those are all really positive things. However, as Reb Zalman said, it doesn't necessarily happen automatically, and we really need to do this inner work. And that inner work was, you know, healing work, life review, and healing wounds, and forgiving self and others, and making amends, and then legacy work, mentoring, coming to terms with our mortality.
Sure.
Mentoring younger ones, acting as stewards of the future and of our time-tested values and of our earth. And those are all part of the inner work that we need to do. And if we do, this is kind of where I am today, is in my passion for getting to the stage where we can legitimately say we're elders or sages in training or aspiring sages, anything that is on that path of wisdom, so that we can reclaim the traditional role of elders as essential members of societies, as catalysts and mentors and now activists. I'm really passionate about changing the paradigm of aging as well as the paradigm of how we live.
I totally agree with you. I mean, and you know, as I gain in years of life experience, I become even more passionate that there's so much value that our society tends to want to discard and marginalize, and it is very frustrating. So
this concludes part one of Jan Fried's interview with Megan Newhouse. Tune in next week for part two.